This is Channel 2.
The Business Bunker with Paul Andrews.
No. Well, welcome back. I'm holding the fort for Paul while he's popped off to water his greens. So, yeah. Call me old-fashioned, but that's what he's up to. So... Oh, he's just coming back through the door now. Somewhere, let's give him a moment to compose himself. He's bound to be out of breath.
Sorry.
So, we know that some of you had some trouble listening in, I think, during the first part of the show, but that's all fixed now, hopefully. Very quickly, Linda, I know you go to these events. A Women in Business Lunch on Thursday the 6th of December. I don't know if you're booked on for this one.
I'm actually going to that one.
Ah, it's at Eastwell Manor. Just down the road from here. It's from 11:15 to 2:30, and it's chaired by Emma Lydiard, who is the MD of Global Radio Kent, and that's Heart and all sorts of other stations. So you can book on for that at www.kentwomeninbusiness.co.uk. Paul, you won't be going to that one, I don't think, will you?
Why?
Well, for obvious reasons. Unless you're going to be putting your pink tutu on.
I think they could allow men in because
it's discrimination. It's being politically incorrect again.
We're now going to play musical chairs and I'm going to hand you back to Paul.
So we sing in the background?
thank you for that, Martin. Right, where were we? Okay. We got loads of tweets. We've got two fabulous guests to talk to in the second half of the show. Let's carry on with some of the tweets. Interestingly, I've had a tweet from Miss MP Services. That's the lovely Claire Runham. And she says she's looking forward to being on a Business Bunker show next week. So she's our guest next week. We've also had a tweet from Compare and Recycle. And they say, hi, Vanilla Web. We'd love a Business Bunker shout out to up and coming Green Tuesday. Green Tuesday is to encourage tech recycling after new items are purchased this Black Friday. Okay, so if you're buying a new phone, a new tablet, a new laptop or anything like that and getting rid of your old one, you need to recycle it. There are an astonishing 125 million old mobiles and devices hidden in drawers. Yeah, that's my drawer. So how many have you got?
Lots.
I've got lots too, you know.
Six. Bruce is saying six.
Huh?
Bruce has got six.
Do you know what? I've got at least four Nokia 3310s in my drawer.
Well, my wife's phone is on the blink at the moment, and I was trying to do some work yesterday while she was rummaging through my drawers looking for her old equipment.
Was she?
And believe you me, there's lots of it.
So, who are Mrs.?
So Bruce has had to, he's had to switch off.
There's the cough button, Bruce. The
anyway,
button.
So yes, we've all got lots of that, haven't we?
So Compare and Recycle, Green Tuesday, astonishing 125 million own mobile phones and devices hidden in drawers and homes not being used. So do check out Compare and Recycle because they help you get money for your old devices.
I'm going to go completely the other way now, Paul, and go back to traditional printed media because nothing says it quite like a Christmas card. Am I right, Bruce?
Kind of. I'm not a Christmassy person, so I'm not a Christmas card person.
But you're very much a traditionalist, aren't you?
Kind of, yes.
And I'm sorry, but e-Christmas cards, which I have to say I'm guilty of sending every year.
And me.
They just don't cut it. However...
Do you know what? I never send e-cards.
No. I'd like to see the consumer statistics to evidence whether people prefer an e-card or a cardboard card.
I never send e-cards.
Do you?
You never send
any
cards.
I never send any cards.
Right. No cards. Right.
So, yeah. So humbug, and Scrooge and all that.
Yeah.
However, for those of us that do, Terry Seller, who has been on the show before as well, at TIC Media, has got Christmas cards, calendars, and all sorts of branded gifts. He'll even do branded wrapping paper. So if you want your friends and family to remember your business name this Christmas on their nice Chanel perfume, Terry can sort you out. But on a serious note, I'm sure most of us have very sort of high-value customers that we like to kind of look after and nurture a bit more than others. Paul, I know you'll be sending me a Harrods hamper this year. even bigger and better than last year's one.
Martin, a spices of hive hamper.
So do get in touch with Terry for all your Christmas printing needs. It's TIC Media, and he does have a very specific promotion on at the moment. So if you have a look on the community page of Supply My Business, you'll find all the information in there.
Fantastic. Cool. I've got a tweet from Icky Guy. Icky Kai trading as Food Junkies. That's the Food Junkies, and they say Vanilla Web, Martin, please can you give a shout out for the Food Junkies from Icky Guy? Some see us as, come and see us at the monthly Canterbury Vegan Market on the first Sunday of every month from 11 a.m. till 6 in December.
Bruce,
yes,
you're a vegan.
I'm a food junkie
eater.
Yeah.
So are you? Do you go to that? Is that something you?
I am the food junkie that sent the text.
Oh,
in, yes.
You are. Oh, okay. Did Paul know that?
Sorry.
Were you aware that?
I think he might have. Yes.
It's our good friend Bruce in the room.
Yes, I know that. Yes.
Oh, I didn't. Sorry. As always, I'm the last to learn about everything. So good.
So yes, we go monthly to the first now, to the vegan markets on the first Sunday.
It's interesting, isn't it? Because we were talking about motor racing earlier on. And I know it's a slightly tenuous link, but I know for a fact that Lewis Hamilton, 5-time world champion, congratulations, Lewis, he's also a vegan now, isn't
he? Yes.
So so just the fact that you can't have any animal fats or any kind of animal product doesn't necessarily mean that you can't be an incredibly fit and healthy, strong individual.
Well, no.
You just have to look at me. Can I just point out gorillas are vegan?
To know that I'm definitely not a stick. So, absolutely not. I mean, the food that we produce as a company is the kind of stuff that you look at and you wouldn't think it's vegan. So, things like pasties and steak and al pasti, I do quiches. So, real good, fantastic food, but totally vegan.
So, is that, how do we get around that problem? And is it soya based?
No, not necessarily. Not necessarily. I use cashew nuts a lot.
Right.
In the baking, I make cheese from cashew nuts.
I bet you read with interest the article or a news item that was on the BBC, I think it was last week. Is it Waitrose or someone's about to start selling crickets?
Oh, Sainsbury's.
Oh, really? Oh,
Sainsbury's, is it? Yes. So
high fat and protein.
I remember giving Paul for his birthday this year a joke cookbook, which is all about it was called the Insect Cookbook.
Oh.
And it was actually a school that had been in the schools initiative called that you get involved with
30-30.
No, the other one where they have to start a business.
Young Enterprise.
Yeah. So it was a Young Enterprise business that I had judged this year, and I was so impressed with this cookbook that I bought one. But the sort of the prohibitive thing about it was the lack of availability of the insects that kind of form, you know, one of the key ingredients. But now a national supermarket chain has come out and said it's going to start selling crickets.
Well, I think Europe can only be one of the continents that's left that actually doesn't have insects as a normal part of their diet. I mean, I lived in South Africa for 18 months, and we had a domestic help who would regularly be frying up these flying ants in our frying pans, and the kids thought nothing of it. They'd chomp into those. It's like we're just so squeamish.
And they eat mapani worms in South Africa.
Exactly. Oh, don't go there. Don't go there.
But why is it? You've just mentioned that, you know, you make the vegan food to look like meat. Why do we need to do that?
Yeah, we don't.
Why is it that we need to make food look like meat even when it isn't?
Because eating is not just the taste of it, isn't.
No.
You eat with your senses, you eat with your eyes.
Presentation.
Too. So I think for me, I love meat, don't get me wrong. I love meat and I used to love meat and I still do. However, I try and mimic meat because I like it, not because I don't like it. So some people are vegan because they couldn't stand meat in the texture.
In the whole vegetarian world, like they'll make vegetarian sausage rolls.
Well, yes.
It's almost like we're having to duplicate or make it look like something to appeal to people who are trying to avoid me. Sorry.
You want to go back to your mapani worms, don't
you? Well, mapani worms, I eat three of those. I eat three of those critters.
Three more than I did.
They look like witchetty grubs.
Yeah, they do. They're like witchetty grubs.
Like crunchy.
Oh, God. When you bite into them and they pop. Oh.
Yeah, don't go there.
No, don't.
I have eaten crickets as well, though. And crickets are nice. They taste nice. They taste like nuts. Bruce doesn't like them.
So
high protein, though. High protein.
That's the key thing. They're high protein. So they're very nutritious.
It's the most densely protein for the smallest amount of cost to produce in the world. But the interesting thing is that the Dutch farm them and Californians farm crickets. for commercial use. And one of the big uses of roasted crickets is for those people with nut allergies, so you can use them in recipes because they taste like nuts.
Yes.
They're fabulous.
Hence your cookbook that you're going to start using a bit more.
Exactly, yeah. What I don't recommend, and I have tried it, was deep-fried scorpions.
Oh.
Nah, didn't do anything for me.
They do deep-fried tarantulas as well, don't they?
Yeah, absolutely.
Oh, no, I don't like them alive, let alone dead, and want to eat one.
What's the difference between that and prawns or langoustines?
No difference.
Mm. Same stuff, isn't it?
Yeah, which I wouldn't eat any of anyway, so no.
We're digressing.
Sorry.
We've turned into a food show.
Yeah, and we don't want to do that. No. What we want to do is talk to our next two guests. So I'll leave it to you, Martin, to choose who you'd like to speak to first.
Right.
I'll take the best till last, Martin. Yeah.
Well, we're going to...
But while you're doing that, I'm going to read out another tweet that I've got.
Okay.
And this is from the Marble Tabletop Company. And they say, Vanilla Way, good luck with the programme today. Say hello to Tracy, who I met very recently for the Ashford Business Awards.
Hello.
The winners are announced next week of the Ashford Business Awards, so fingers crossed there. And a quick shout-out, please, for the launch of in the next few days of the My Marble Tabletop Company. And you can follow them on the Twitter, and their Twitter handle is marble_table. So do give them a follow.
Sounds expensive.
It's really cool. Business. Check it out. It's really cool. Yeah.
Well, they've done our job for us because they've made reference to Tracy and recent success for being shortlisted in the Ashford Business Awards. And Bruce, I think you've been shortlisted as well, haven't you?
Not this time.
No, your Canterbury Business Awards, I think, last time, weren't you?
Last time, Ashford
as well. So Tracy.
Yes.
Why don't we come to you on the back of that? And your company is called Pecunia.
That's right. Yes.
2016.
Yes.
Because that's when you started the business.
We started the business. Yes.
And I went to one of your seminars recently at Chatham Dockyard, all about credit management.
Yes.
And that's really what you do as a business, isn't it?
It is, yes. It's helping businesses really look after an area of their business that's probably not been looked after for many, many years. And it's the most important part as far as I'm concerned. I'm all about cash. We should get cash into the business for our, you know, basically for us to be able to grow our business and be more stable. And that's the whole premise of setting up Pecunia, is to primarily help businesses with that area.
And you're quite sort of black and white when it comes to businesses that are owed money, aren't you? Whereas a lot of us business owners, we tiptoe around the problem, don't we? Because we don't want to upset an important customer by asking them to pay us, and you know, silly things like that.
Yeah, that is quite a big problem, which we can understand because you know we're always told that you know you've got to give good customer service and everything else. But I've been in credit management for a good few number of years, and as I said to you the other week, I've never lost a customer or a client asking them to pay for something that they've had, whether that be a product or a service. So, you know, you shouldn't be frightened to ask to be paid for something that you've done to aid that client and customer. And at the end of the day, you're not a business, you're not a charity, but you are a business. So you need that money to come back into your company for you to be able to do all the great things that you want to do.
So we're talking, at the moment, we're talking about debtor days, aren't we? That kind of nasty word. What does that even mean? What does debtor days actually mean inside
a
business?
Well, basically, debtor days is the amount of days that has been left out, your invoice outstanding. So that has quite a big impact on a business, especially when you're looking at your cash flow. Generally, when I go around and speak to people and they say, what do you do? And I say, well, you know, I do credit management and do a cash flow. And they all start to recoil and decide that they want to talk to somebody else in the room, which is fine. But cash flow is the most crucial part of any business. And the sales ledger, which is the place where you put all your invoices when you do a job, that is actually an asset. And the majority of businesses in this day and age only have that one asset. Yeah. So what we try and help businesses to understand the entire process,
to make sure that they can look after that asset, for that asset to be able to work for the business, so they can also be productive as well. Because when a business grows, you need to employ more people, you might need to rent an office, you might need to get some other facilities, like Bruce was saying, with his products, and get experts in, like Linda, to help your business grow. But how are you going to achieve that without the money? At the end of the day, so it, you know, I always talk about money. Cash is king. Money. Money makes the world go round.
But it becomes a sort of a knock on self fulfilling kind of thing in many ways, doesn't it? Because if you're not getting paid, you can't pay your suppliers, which
exactly.
means they can't pay their suppliers. And the whole thing just goes round in this nasty bubble of kind of non-payment. And I know the FSB have identified this still as a massive problem. And despite the fact we've got European regulation now that kind of, in theory, dictates, strict payment terms on kind of supplier and on that basis, it doesn't really work like that, does it?
No, I mean, what businesses really need to get a grip of is, it's all well and good going out and getting your customers, but if you are a business that's going to be selling on credit, which most people do in this day and age, you're actually primarily lending money. So you need to do quite a few things to really start bolster up your processes, which is understand who it is you're actually dealing with.
Right.
You've got the right company. You know that they are going to be able to pay you. You can credit check them. You can make sure you know exactly where they are, who's responsible for paying the invoices, who's responsible for sending off purchase orders, things like that. So that's the first basis of when
you do your due diligence. Almost have a folder, I guess, and it could be a simple kind of Word template that says company X, key contact, payment terms Y, and phone number.
Exactly. Mm. I mean, if you think about going into a bank and you want to borrow some money, what's the first thing they're going to give you? A form to fill in.
Right.
Because they want to know everything about you. As a business, you are lending money, you're lending credit.
That's a good analogy, because if you were late on a bank repayment on a loan, they'd come down on you like a ton of bricks, wouldn't they?
Exactly. And, I mean, there are other things out there, like the Late Payment Act and things like that, that businesses can obviously use within their late payments of their invoices. But these are the areas that a lot of businesses, and I don't say this, I don't say this lightly, because there are some fantastic businesses that I've met since we've incorporated. And they have the most brilliant ideas, they have the most fantastic vision, and they're excellent at what they actually do. But the problem does come from understanding what it's like to run a business, and primarily it's the cash side of things. Because it's all well and good that you're really good at doing whatever you do. We talk about, I make widgets, which is something we talked about at the workshop. But you may be the best widget maker in the whole wide world, but you're not going to be successful if you're not going to be paid for it. And that's what it all boils down to. So basically, we realised that there was a massive gap in the market to try and engage with lots of different businesses of all sizes that really want to have an understanding and a grip of this one part of their business. And we're going back to training. We mentioned training earlier on with Bruce and all the events that come up where people offer workshops. Now, people need to be trained for so many reasons, and it needs to be classed as an investment in the business as opposed to an expense. Because you've already employed people that understand your business, they understand your formulas and your formats, etc. And then to actually instill some trust in them and to also pay for them to go on some training events, you're actually giving them extra knowledge to be able to be more productive in the area of the business that they're working in. So if we take, for instance, a credit controller, there is a massive percentage of credit controllers in businesses across the UK that have never, ever had any training. And a lot of businesses come across and say, but they're only picking up the phone and asking somebody to pay. But in all fairness, there's a lot more to being a credit controller. I mean,
yeah, you need a baseball bat and everything.
Well, all of the due diligence you've just spoken about. And fundamentally, what's lacking is the process inside the business to manage all of that.
Without a doubt. And I mean, if you take a credit controller's role, and job description. That individual has a number of other job descriptions within their job because they have to be a detective, a lawyer, a risk assessor, a salesperson, a negotiator, somebody that's great in customer management, an accountant, a problem solver. And this is everything that one individual must understand to be able to deliver to do such a great job. And a great credit controller or credit manager within a business is most, without a shadow of a doubt, they're worth their weight in gold because they are generally the front line of where your customers will speak to after they've had some work done.
Absolutely. And it's not, you know, people can look at this in a bit of a black and white way that says, okay, yeah, I understand it's important, you know, because we need to get our money in. But it's not just getting the money, it's getting it in on time.
Yes.
Because most businesses fail not because they, you know, run out of customers. It's because they run out of money, their cash flow. So it's really important not only that you get paid, but you actually get paid sooner rather than later.
Oh, most definitely. And not that I want to sort of start throwing out hundreds of statistics.
But... Oh, go on, I like a stat.
Do you like a stat?
I like a stat, yeah.
Right, well, I actually downloaded this yesterday, and this is around in 2006, the UK, there was 414,000 business births. That's new businesses, new SMEs that incorporated. And there was 328,000 business deaths.
Yeah.
So that actually just leaves 31,000 for that one particular year.
Yeah.
To actually still be trading. Mm-hmm. And them statistics are very high. And at least 75% of business that fail purely on cash flow.
Yeah, absolutely.
And what we try to do is, as I say, work with the business, get that business's dream to come true, to get them to all work together. We offer a free consultation to any business that has any issues within their credit management function and cash flow issues. And the big thing about what we do is by the time we've worked with the company, we've started to develop policies and processes and how to do this job really, really well that's going to benefit the business, they'll see an increase in their cash flow without a shadow of a doubt. And we've seen it time and time again with many, many of our clients. And the thing is if you think about your sales ledger as an asset, that is the heart of your business. Now, that heart has got to beat the blood around the rest of your business. Mm. Now, if you've got somebody in there that's looking after the heart of your business, that's just a GP. And what I say and mean by that is somebody that does two or three other jobs and has the pressure of being a credit controller as well. Mm. They're going to notice a few glitches, a few issues, a few problems, and basically throw a few paracetamols at it, hoping that that's going to solve the problem. But ideally, going back to the training side of things and making the knowledge of that person so much more available, then they'll be qualified as a heart consultant, making sure that heart is beating fantastically for that business, getting that blood moving around that business, making that business more stable, making sure that business is going to grow. And if there are any little issues and niggles that are coming their way, they'll be all over it.
Absolutely. I mean, the point is, especially in small businesses, isn't it, that credit control is one of those difficult tasks because you're scared about antagonizing what may be your only customer or your main customer or one of your biggest customers. And without being funny, I'm not asking Tracy to comment on this, but it, for me, it's normally the bigger organisations that are the worst payers. And the ones that go, oh, you missed the pay run, sorry, you'll have to wait till next month. Oh, sorry, you missed the pay run. We didn't miss anything, you missed it. And they tend to be the worst at not paying. And they do that because they know they've got you by the short and curly. So if you're working in credit control, trying to handle that trade-off between being strict on getting your money in but being customer-focused so that you don't annoy them at the same time is really tough.
But I mean, the reality is, isn't it? I mean, and I've seen this in businesses that I've worked in the past. If you don't ask your customers to pay you, a lot of them won't.
No.
That's the simple reality. It's like, well, you know, yes, you sent me an invoice, but you didn't actually chase it then, so I didn't pay you.
We're embarrassed to ask about money, aren't we?
Yeah. Most definitely. I think that's, we say it's a bit of a British trait. We don't like asking to be paid for something we've done. But in all fairness, you know, you don't really, you might want to do it for love, but in all honesty, you're in business.
But that's the reality, isn't it? A lot of people say, yeah, but they're my best customer. No, they're not.
No.
They're not a customer at all because they haven't paid you.
Exactly. I actually invoice my clients in advance of the work that I do when we're just on the pay-as-you-go option. And if they haven't paid the invoice, I will turn up.
Yeah, exactly.
It would be like second time.
In my business, for many years, I had a lot of bad debt problems. People just would not, you know, it wasn't just credit control. They just wouldn't pay. Once we'd finished the job, they just wouldn't pay. So we stopped all that and we charged 100% in advance before we even started.
I mean, if you are a business, then that's an ideal way of doing things. And also, if you've got customers that are willing to pay by direct debit, then that obviously assists your cash flow because you're going to know that every month you're going to get X amount of money coming in through your direct debits. But there are also other little things that you can do, like don't bill everything on the same day of the month. Yeah. And if you're on 30-day terms, you know that primarily you should be getting all that money within that 30 days. But then that's just going to peak your cash flow on one day of the month. But what are you going to do for the rest of it? And going back to the larger customers that you might have on your books, that's great. If you think that you've got an excellent contact within a big organisation, well done you. However, I will always say that make sure you diversify your customer and clients. Because that one business could be the one business that's keeping your working capital. And when I mean working capital, that is the cost of your office, your utilities, your staff, your insurance, everything. I always say to businesses that try and find companies and jobs that are bread and butter. Because you can eat bread and butter. Yeah. You can't eat a promise from a big major business.
Absolutely.
And also we have looked at companies that say, oh, I don't want to, you know, don't want to chase this guy because, you know, he does a lot of work with us and, you know, he's like about 65% of our turnover. But when you actually look at what they do and how long it takes them to pay against the five other customers that they had, if they put a lot more time and energy into the five other customers than wasting the time and energy of the supposed great client, they would have increased their sales on that five and they could have got rid of the one that was not paying them. So there are many, many ways to, as I say, skin a cat.
The flip side of bringing money in, of course, is the timing of money going out as well. So
definitely. I mean, that is one thing we also look at. We look at inflows as well as outflows. Because, you know, you've got to make sure that you maintain that you have enough money to keep your business afloat. Otherwise, you know, you will be running as a liquidated company. And that has massive implications.
And that's not about on Saturday. A local gin distiller's actually, because that's what I do on my Saturday afternoons.
Fantastic.
It's actually quite interesting to hear from the owner that was doing the tour and tasting. They are obviously having to pay duty on their alcohol production, which has to be paid to HMRC before it's actually put in the bottle, but before that bottle leaves the place. They have just had to raise £500,000 through a crowdfunding initiative, so they've obviously given away share options, to enable their cash flow to manage that cash going out of the business. And they're selling to the big supermarkets who are paying them on 90 days.
Yes. Indeed.
It's quite an unusual situation.
That's a really good point, though, isn't it?
It is.
HMRC, haven't they just nominated themselves as a preferred creditor?
The lovely budget that we've had. Yeah. Yes, they will now be back as a preferred creditor.
Yeah. So if you have got a VAT bill outstanding.
Exactly.
And the business becomes insolvent.
Yes. I thought that was the case anyway.
No. They stopped that quite a while back, quite a few years ago. But, you know, and at the end of the day, it is all about some real primary things that a lot of businesses don't even consider, because we come across businesses all the time that they, you know, they're like, running around like headless chickens. And also some people, unfortunately, and please don't do this, any listener out there, go to B&Q, buy a bucket, fill it with sand and stick your head in it. Because the thing is that the sooner you look at these issues and think, I actually have a problem, is the best time to get in contact. Because we actually do work with a lot of other businesses to help get and maintain a business on track. And we, you know, we offer a lot of different training from, you know, credit control for small businesses, telephone techniques, and how to actually engage with your customers, introduction to the world of credit control, right through to negotiating and influencing skills. These are, you know, these are really key primary areas for businesses to really get a grip of. And bearing in mind we're talking about money, you know, it is one of them things that we're really trying to engage with as many businesses in Kent, bearing in mind Kent has the largest quantity of SMEs in the whole of the UK. And SMEs are over 55%, I believe, of all businesses in the UK for the UK economy. So we are really, really important for the UK economy. And, you know, I want to really try and strive to make sure that as many businesses, SME businesses out there are going to be safe and secure for the future and to be able to grow and to grow in employment.
And going back to what you were saying earlier on about health and NHS and everything else, is this something that, that we think might find its way onto the NHS at some point, this whole kind of credit management kind of training?
And well,
it should be on there, shouldn't it?
I think, to be honest with you, it's imperative. Because, you know, you're entrusting an employee to take on a really, really big task, which is making sure the money comes back into the business. And as I said, the job description of these people are vast. And to just drop somebody in that situation, and even people that have been out there and have had training and had training quite a long time ago, you know, they might sit there and feel, actually, do you know what? I'd like to go on a refresher. I'd like to see what's been going on in the world. And the other big thing about going on training, and I've always said this, that when I've been on training events, I've learnt a lot, but I've also learnt more through the people that are also attending the course with me.
Tracy, you are obviously incredibly passionate about
what
you do. I've been to one of your workshops, and I was impassioned, if that is a word. Through everything that I learnt on your workshop. How can everybody else learn from your expertise? How do we get in touch with you? How do we book this consultation?
Well, you can book your consultation through quite a few different mediums. We're on LinkedIn. As Pecunia 2016 Limited.
So we can connect with you. So Tracy, I'd like you to come in for an hour and look at my credit management process.
Yes, yes. We're on Twitter. We're also on Facebook. Or you can find us online at www.pecunia, that is P-E-C-U-N-I-A, 2016.co.uk.
Brilliant. And I'm sure lots of us will be.
Yeah, thank you for that, Tracy.
My
pleasure. That's really good. Cool. Well, we've got another guest to talk to. We're fast running out of time. So let's crack straight on and introduce Linda Garcia. Linda, thank you so much for joining us.
Oh, it's a pleasure, as always.
You have been on the show a couple of times in the past. Just for those that don't know, and there can't be many people who don't know, why don't you tell people what you do?
I'm the director of Aluxi Consulting, and we are productivity specialists, so very poignant to this afternoon's conversations. We work with the ambitious business owners or the business leaders to optimise the performance or the productivity of your existing resources to maximise your profitability. And like Bruce, he's obviously working with businesses to get the softwares in place to give you that information. What I am doing with the businesses is determining what is the information you need to be managing the resources that you have and make sure that you understand what productivity is, how you can measure it. Sorry, sounds like my phone's buzzing.
Somebody's phone's buzzing.
Generating interest already in the first 2 minutes. It's a very focused process of understanding where is there hidden opportunity within your business to improve. And that hidden opportunity normally is because the average business owner has started up their business off the back of their expertise or their speciality in their whatever their product or service is. But when it comes to managing the people putting in your first levels of team leaders or supervisors and starting to detach yourself from that front line of how the work's actually being done, you can often feel like you're actually losing control. And to overcome that issue, ideally you would have management control systems in place to make sure that you know and you're keeping your finger on the pulse of what is happening in your business without actually having to be too involved in the minute-by-minute, hour-by-hour processes and workflows and whatever's happening on the shop floor. So really where I come in is possibly before Bruce is going to be putting in softwares, you need to define what it is you want to be measuring, what you need to be managing. And interestingly, I've put a blog out this week. I was, I'm not sure if it's up on the website yet. I was in the gym, because yes, I do go out there and I keep fit, on Friday. And recently, the technologies and the devices have all come into on stream where you can now attach yourself up to your heart monitor and your little Fitbits on your wrists and things like that. And in my gym, you're actually getting your dashboard up on the screen next to the other five or six people in the gym who have got that same...
Oh, that's device. Evil. Yes. Oh, that is evil.
It is. And so I've got a photo up, gone to luxeye.co.uk, and hopefully you'll see the latest blog up there, showing that, well, I'm 54% towards my target, my heart rate is at X, and so next to me is at sort of 60%. Oh, that creates a little bit of competition, makes you want to get up and work that little bit harder. And then you'll find that people are actually starting to talk to each other and work out, well, what are you doing to get to your target?
Paul, and don't pretend to know what Linda's talking about. Yeah. So Fitbits and gyms and exercise bikes. Please stop nodding your head. You haven't got a clue.
Oh, I have.
We'll get him in there.
Oh, I have. I've read all about it. I've seen
he's
everybody.
Read the blog.
I've seen everybody.
But the point is, people are actually managing and measuring their performance in their personal environments. And, you know, using that working out and getting yourself fitter is one example.
Yeah.
My argument would be, why aren't people using that in businesses to motivate?
Exactly.
And, you know, where Bruce was saying, or we were talking about, people start to get really nervous when people are watching over you and that big brother effect. Mm. It shouldn't be like that. Mm. Businesses should be proudly displaying everybody's level of where they are in, you know, whether it's producing something or answering a certain number of calls, and it needs to be motivating people towards higher productivity. And I thought that was just an absolute perfect example of, we're deep in our personal lives, why do we get so jittery about it happening in the workplace?
It's
so,
the fear of the unknown, isn't it?
Well, I'm not sure it's necessarily the unknown. Just playing devil's advocate for a minute, I think a lot of it is because in the past we've always had management by statistics.
Yes.
And one of the problems is a lot of it is people invent the statistics they can measure, not the ones that are useful, if you see what I mean.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So you get loads of things like, and I was moaning about this the other day, when you try and deal with a big corporation's customer service department and they fob you off, the reason is they have management statistics that say no call must last longer than 3 minutes.
Exactly.
Which what happens is at 2 minutes and 48 seconds, they go, well, thank you for that. Boom. And all of a sudden the phone goes dead and they go, oh, sorry, we lost you. Yeah. No,
and
you didn't. You're just meeting your statistics. Yeah.
Our company is actually analysing and determining what their statistics need to be. It shouldn't be management by statistics.
Yeah.
The information should be providing managers with the trends and the knowledge of where we are now.
Mm.
Are we having a good day or a bad day?
Yeah.
If we're having a bad day, we need to understand what caused that, which means that if you're not measuring what is causing you to go off plan or off schedule, if you don't know what those causes are, you can't manage it. So when you come to sit down with staff to analyse and understand, you know, what has gone wrong, if you're taking corrective action and you haven't got more information coming through to determine whether that action was the right one or the wrong one, you're not going to be able to improve. And that is where the information should feed an informed decision-making process.
Mm-hmm. I mean, this is the crucial thing, isn't it? With Bruce's software and the kind of consulting work that you're doing, it's about having an integrated platform that gives you usable stuff.
Yeah.
The problem for me is there are far too many companies, and certainly big organisations, you know, utility companies, phone companies are the worst, insurance companies are all the worst at this. You try and talk to them, and they don't want to know, and they don't want to know because you don't fit within their statistical parameters.
Yeah.
And that isn't helping anyone.
Nope.
It's just a tool for management to tick some boxes.
So businesses have lost sight, haven't they?
I used to be head of technology at Citibank, yeah? And my management said to me, we want to produce a report where we want to have global network availability at least at 99%. So every month I sent a report saying it was 99.9%. And they went, we were down for a week, and I went, but we had an acoustic coupler in India that was working, so it wasn't 100% failure, so we were up 99.9% of the time.
This is where you have to analyse and make sure that the statistics you are getting are actually credible, which is where, you know, decent software is coming from.
Exactly, and that's exactly the point, isn't it?
But one of the bigger issues is, and I actually made this point in a... I was at a seminar that Creston Reeves had put on, a little bit of a push there for Creston Reeves, with Will Abel from the Bank of England. I'd made the point, how many companies actually know what productivity is?
Right. Yes.
Mm. Because there was an article actually in the Chamber of Commerce magazine that Joe James had written from their Kent Construction Forum, where the Kent Construction Forum couldn't actually put their finger on determining how they should be measuring productivity. Mm. Mm. I'm a productivity specialist. Mm. I know how to take the information and your own business environment and determine what should your output be and what are your inputs to determine whether you are being productive or not. Because
Which, for construction, is basically output over input.
Mm.
Mm. I mean, for construction, that's unbelievable, isn't it? Because what happened to good old-fashioned time
tangible.
And motion?
That went out of fashion. People started, unions came on board. Mm. People started getting nervous about being managed. And so it went out of the window. And
but
it has taken us 20 or 30 years now to start focusing on the fact that we have now lost our productivity base in the UK, and it's becoming a buzzword again, and people are starting to recognise, hell, we need to be monitoring our productivity because that is what makes the world go round.
Mm. So cutting through all the jargon, because inevitably there is a lot of jargon in any kind of consulting environment, and I know that's not what you're about, but cutting through all of that, what we're fundamentally talking about for a lot of businesses, I guess, Linda, is you looking at how long it takes a business to complete or an individual to complete a task within that business.
That is one small part of it. If you don't know how long it should take to do a job or how much work you should be able to put out in a certain amount of paid time, let's face it, you know, that is your cost base. As Bruce said, the most the biggest asset in the business is normally the people. Then you can't say that whether your people are producing to the desired standard or not. And if you don't know what your standards are, you don't know whether they're being efficient.
Right.
I know I've waxed lyrically about this before, but there is a big difference between the three key points of measure: utilisation, efficiency and productivity are not the same. They are very different. And you have to know how much time are you paying for, how much time should it take to do the work, whether that's attending to a customer. If it's not happening in their 3 minutes, that is an average. Some customers might need 6 minutes, some customers might need 2 minutes.
Yeah.
It's the measure, it's knowing what your standards are.
But call centres are a great example, aren't they? You know, how much productivity focus is there within a customer call centre? Every time you ring up, it doesn't matter who it is, it could be Sky, BT, whoever it is, you are in a queue, we're going to get to you in the next 7 to 9 minutes.
Mm.
And you think, 7 to 9 minutes? Has somebody within that organisation at an ops director level really decided that 7 to 9 minutes wait on a phone line is acceptable from a customer experience point of view?
That's not to say that it's acceptable, but it is the company trying to give the customer an idea that, yes, you are going to have
No, actually, just let me put you straight here. it's the organisation telling you they're not interested in your custom, and if you think you're going to hang around for 9 minutes, that's your problem. If you're going to hang on the phone for 9 minutes, you must have a big problem, and everybody else can do one.
Starting to identify that. Mm. Well, if you leave us your name and number, we will call you back, so you don't miss your time in the slot. Vodafone has started to do that.
Don't even go there.
But essentially, that productivity, the managing of the information, is only half the story, and Tracy's been talking about training people. Mm. If you do not train people to understand what the business needs are, what the objectives are, why they need you to work in a certain way, and why also they're very happy for the frontline workers to come forward with better ideas. Mm. If you see that things could be done differently and would be more productive or more efficient, there needs to be the forums to be able to get workers talking to frontline management that then gets fed up to middle management and senior management, so that ideas are being creatively fed through. That is 90% of the effort that should be going into managing businesses. The actual information flows is just 10% of it. Once you've got the information flowing, if people don't use it, and this is probably your biggest frustration, that you put in all these beautiful softwares and then nobody actually uses that information. If you've got the right management meeting flows, and don't all pass out of the of having to sit down and have meetings, but yes, you have to talk to people. Managers need to speak to their subordinates, subordinates need to speak to their managers. Every worker deserves one-on-one time with their manager, and that is what drives that culture of let's try and improve this. And that's what's happening in the gym, it should happen in the workplace.
Absolutely.
We need to, I know you're going to remind us that the news is coming in 6 or 7 minutes. We need to ask Linda about her leadership and management training program that starts in January. Let's get on to that.
Yes, I'm running an open course. It is a program that I run with businesses that do the full business improvement program. This provides basically the A to Z of what you need to put in place in your business. So I need to find a sexier name for it. I was thinking of build a business, but then...
Well, you've called it productivity to profit.
Productivity to profit, yes. So it's giving you the tools and the techniques. What is a management control system? What are the different elements that you need to set up? How do you identify what your key performance indicators should be? How do you identify what your specific measure of productivity may be in your business? And it might be a different productivity measurement in every department. What are the management skills that you need to ensure that you're using that information to its best advantage so that you can start to see things improving in your business? How can you measure that improvement and show whether it's having an impact on your bottom line or not? We do look at the soft skills that are required, the negotiating, the communication skills, confrontation, how to deal with confrontation and conflict, which, let's face it, if people were talking to each other more, there wouldn't be any confrontation and conflict because you'd have already sort of dissipated why we need to get together and talk about how things are going in your job, whether that's a 2 minute huddle at the end of the day or an hour's production meeting on a Monday morning that everybody dreads. So the whole program delivers all of those separate skills. I run it deliberately. It's 6 sessions, approximately 2 to 3 hours each, over 12 weeks. So I run it fortnightly because at the end of each session, you have to go away and actually start implementing the techniques that we've talked about during the session. I give you the tools, the templates that you need to put things into, actively use them in your working environment. And then at the start of the following session, we go back, we review how you've managed to actually implement those things in your business, discuss it, mull over the issues that you might have had and try to help you fine tune and tweak that. And then we move on to the next lot of theory. So it's getting you really putting theory into practice and making it relevant in your business. The advantages of the open course is that you'll obviously be in the room with 5, 6, 10 other business owners in different environments, so we can analyse how it's different in different environments.
And you get different ideas.
And cross-fertilise ideas, exactly.
Yeah. But again, it's a no-brainer, isn't it? It's, you know, if you're a business that employs staff and you want to understand whether or not your staff and therefore your business output is as productive or is maximised in as far as it can be, you need to look into that.
Yeah. You know. And that's where having the statistics comes into play of knowing what your current levels, you know, what your daily level of productivity is, or, you know, utilisation and efficiency, you need to measure those as well. If they're the only things that you can measure, then at least it is a point of measure.
But you need to do it by talking to the frontline staff and listening to what they say.
Yep.
Back in the days when I was a management consultant, I used to do this thing about iceberg management. And unfortunately, iceberg management still exists today in most places. And iceberg management is the senior management of an organisation know approximately 4% of what's going on, and the executive management know about 9%, and the supervisors know about 17%, and the frontline staff know 100%, but they never ask the frontline staff.
What the frontline staff generally don't understand is what the overall business objectives
are.
And, you know, your 4% at the top are working on financial indicators. They know that we want to turn over 10 million and we want to produce, you know, £200,000 profit. What they don't do is then translate that into a meaningful measure that is something that, you know, somebody out on the shop floor can measure hourly or daily that then isn't them having to worry about, are we getting our annual goals? No, they need to have it broken down into something that they relate to in their day-to-day nitty-gritty role.
I want to ask your opinion on this, Linda, as a specialist in this area. Do you not think that a lot of the problem is that the senior management know the overall goals of the business and they try and implement them from the top, whereas what they should do is find out how their business works, yeah, and then try and make it fit what the overall business goals are.
Which is exactly where I sort of work with businesses, and I specifically say we will look at your existing resources because very often, we were talking earlier about throwing people at the problem.
Yeah.
I can highlight where there might be so much slack in the existing resources that a business has, but because the, you know, that the higher levels of the organisation might not be able to see that, it's so hidden because they're not getting information coming up from the front line that they don't know that they've got this slack, so they instantly start to throw people at the problem.
Exactly, which is what he was saying earlier on, Martin. Yeah. Mm.
Right, Linda.
Martin.
We've got 2 minutes.
Have we?
So,
quiz show.
We need to help people understand how they can talk to you. So what's the best way to find out more about the Leadership Management Productivity to Profit Programme? How can people follow you on Twitter?
People can follow me. Well, the first thing to do is to pick up the phone and talk to me. Let's have a good old-fashioned conversation. My contact number is 07717221368. I am on Twitter. I'm at Aluxi Consults. My website is aluxi.co.uk. And all my contact details are on there. You can email me, linda@aluxi.co.uk. Aluxi.co.uk features strongly in my contacting me.
And all of those details are on the Campus Shift Radio website and will be under show number 404, which does exist, forever.
And on Supply My Business website as well.
Yes.
But do talk to Linda about her training programme that she's got coming up. I mean, one of the points you haven't made today, but you normally always make, is that there are an awful lot of managers out there that are managers in job title only who have no experience or understanding of how to manage.
That is one of the reasons productivity in the UK has declined so badly in the last 20 years is because managers have not been trained adequately and not developed adequately. It is a skill. It can be trained. And early bird offer, anybody that wants to join that course in January, if you book before the 30th of November, there is a 25% discount, which represents a saving of £400, because that's what we like to give businesses, saving. So it's £995 per person, which actually works out at less than £200 a session. If you want to compare it with all those other offers out there, book before the 30th of November.
Linda, thank you so much for that. We've reached the end of the show now. I just need to tell you about Friday, Business Bunker Extra Show, our sister show on Friday at 11 o'clock, presented by Amanda Flanders. Her co-host this week is Richard Bell. He's a security and cyber specialist, and they're talking about the security risks of Black Friday. And they're also joined on the show by Barry and John from Me Now. So tune in to Bunker Extra Show, 11 o'clock on Friday. I want to say a big thank you to Bruce Kidd of Oasis, to Tracy from Pecunia.
Thank you.
And to Linda from Aluxi Consultant.
Thank
you. Mr. Marvellous Martin, my co-host. Thank you so much for joining us on the Business Bunker Show. We will be back with you next Tuesday for another show. In the interim, have a great week and we will see you all soon. And bye for now.
Bye.
The Business Bunker with Paul Andrews.